Okay, last week, from what Mr. Holman told me, you started chapter 10, but mm-hmm. did not really complete chapter 10 because it had so many mm-hmm. Application questions. And if I understand it correctly, the difference between chapter 10 and chapter 11, they're similar, but one is for the families and the other is for parents. In other words, let's see. On page 170, it talks about the difference. It says specific family situations in chapter 10, and then parental strategies for some of the same situations in chapter 11. So as I read through the two chapters, I noticed there were some repeats. And they said some of the same things, but it was just from a different point of view. Mm-hmm. So we can... If you look at chapter 10, maybe the best way to do it would be to ask you to pick out a point that you would like to finish discussing in chapter 10.
We sort of went through the major areas starting at the beginning, and we did forgetting. We've gone through forgetting. We've touched on lying. We talked about not eating. Yeah, we did that. And I think that was the last part.
Yeah.
So...
Not eating was the last one that you
yeah.
did.
Yes. Yeah, okay. So we talked about that.
So maybe we just to wrap that one up, how do you feel about the it's more let reality teach them. What would reality be in teaching them about not eating?
You're hungry.
You're hungry. That's right. Do you feel like, are you willing to do that with your kids?
Yeah, I have, and it's not. I think we did it early on, so it's not an issue. But Darina has
not that much.
Darina has other.
Yeah. That I mean that's the nurturing instinct, isn't it?
Yeah.
It, because that's what you think of in nature. That's what mothers must do for their young is to feed
difficult.
Them.
Yes.
Well, that's, if they're especially if he doesn't want to eat all the time.
That's right. That's right.
Or if they're goofing around at the table, or if they're having some bad manners,
uh-huh.
you know, we say, if you can't use good manners at this table, you'll leave.
Right.
But when they do it again, and we have to keep our word, part of me it's like, well, but I want him to eat.
They'll get sick. Yes.
That's what's really difficult. Not other situations, but that's really difficult.
Right.
So I struggle with that one.
There's another teacher that has a discipline approach. It's a little different than layman's. His is more from a secular point of view, but he agrees that is the way to do it with children. It shouldn't be a battle. If they're hungry, they will eat.
Mm-hmm.
No child has died from starvation by missing a meal.
This is what my husband tells me.
I know.
It's okay.
Hunger will teach the child to eat.
Yeah.
The key there is to then regulate so that they don't then swipe snacks
exactly.
or things on the sly. I'm thinking of my grandson, Ethan, because Stacy had this difficulty with him, and he's a little stinker. He would crawl up. He'd get the chair, crawl up in the cupboard, and start pulling out cookies. So then, that's a different problem, though.
Right.
Then it's no longer a problem of getting him to eat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem of disciplining him for taking things that really aren't his to take.
He has to ask for it. No,
that's right.
I mean,
that's right.
Talk him. That was can I have the chocolate? Can I have an apple? Can I have this?
Right. And then if you've got that much control, then you say to him at that point, well, you had an opportunity to eat,
mm-hmm.
And you chose not to eat. So we'll be serving breakfast at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
From now on.
Right.
You know, it works. That'll because he's had such a history of not having to worry about it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to fight you the first couple mm-hmm. times, and so knowing that, just say okay. That's his job. He's supposed to fight it to see if the boundary is really there. Okay, so we'll get past this one. All right, okay, he's going to test it again to make sure, is she really mean that?
Right.
But usually after
that. So 2-3 times and that's it.
And then the hard part comes for teachers then, too. I mean, because usually we have the female teachers in kindergarten, first, second, third grade, and some of the eating habits still carry over into the classroom.
Yeah.
And it's important in a classroom situation that the kids stay on schedule a little bit better. If you have to make a child eat, you know, that's the whole principle, that it's really, you're not able to make a child do anything, and that's what reality discipline is all about. The child will do the things that he, by reality, realizes are necessary for him. And so if a child isn't hungry at lunchtime, when lunch is scheduled in the schedule, the teacher really can't make them eat. But they can say, it's time for recess now, put your lunch away, and then they bring it home. But, you know, eventually, after a while, you're going to... Oh, yeah, I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. Yeah. But if they're not hungry, then I guess then they'll learn eventually that the time to eat is now, so I better eat now, because otherwise I'm going to be hungry a little bit later. It's a tough one. It's where the reality discipline, where the rubber hits the road, where practicality comes into play. How about selfishness? Any comments, or did you pick out any key points that he was trying to make in that regard?
We didn't talk about it, did we?
Yeah, we hadn't done that one yet.
No, this is the first one.
Let's see.
The example that was used here.
They're all selfish, the kids.
Because they're born.
It is normal for a child to be selfish.
In general.
And they don't really understand anything but taking care of their own needs. Their world starts in the womb, and it grows out as they're able to see and experience more, when a baby really doesn't have the sight to experience the world other than what he's able to reach. And that continues to grow. His mother is his world. You know, and as they get older, then that world starts to expand a little bit. So it's natural that they would be selfish. That it becomes a problem when they get into social settings, and that's where we get into brothers and sisters, extended family,
cousins,
organized activities like sports teams, if they get some real young ones, or having friends over to play, finally getting into preschool, kindergarten, first grade, and the ways that they handle things early on set the pattern for the way that things are going to be handled later on in life. The example that he used was ungratefulness. Selfishness and being ungrateful, not appreciating a gift that's been given to you.
Now, what is that?
He gave the example of said, don't...
181?
Yeah.
181, where a father would always bring a child a gift after he's come back from a trip.
Yeah, I remember.
And he would not only not say thank you, he would say, I don't like it, you know, or he would... And so what Layman says is, it's a real simple solution for that one.
Yeah.
Take it back.
Right.
He doesn't get to keep it. If he doesn't like it, and then he takes it back, and then he can give the gift to maybe a different child. Maybe, if there are no brothers and sisters, maybe a cousin, or maybe one of the neighbor kids. And to me, you know, you can take that the next step, I would say. Because the selfishness comes more in the way that they learn that word very quickly, mine.
Right.
Mine. You know, they don't want to let others play with it. If it gets to be too much of a problem, then I think his examples of giving the toys away, that's
powerful.
That's pretty powerful. That's reality. And we've talked about the what did you call that? You have a bin or something where they...
Yeah, it's like a basket.
The basket.
Yeah.
So you don't want to throw it away, but at the same time, because you feel like that would be wasteful, but it would teach them. Leave them out, you're going to lose it.
Right.
If you don't appreciate what you've got, if you aren't willing to share what God has blessed you with, then you're going to lose it. And that might be a place where you could put it. Or if it continues to be too big of a problem, then you start giving away toys. Because
you keep the basket in your room somewhere, so they don't get access to it, right?
Actually, no, I want them to have access to it because we have our couch and living room area and our kitchen and dining area. It's all open, but our couch divides the carpeted area from the kitchen area. Mm-hmm. And right behind the couch is, you know, really nice big basket with mm-hmm. a handle. And if I set a bunch of their toys on this back table, which I don't want it cluttered with stuff, so I'll scoop them up, I'll put them in the basket, and I'll say, you know what? You have 5 minutes to get what you want out of the basket. Otherwise, I'm either chucking it, or I'm going to put it in my garage sale pile where I get to keep the money.
Ah, yeah, that's just good. As good, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's reality.
Oh, yes. It's like, no! Their feet and hands move very fast.
Right.
You know, so yes, I do want them. And so now they're getting trained that when they walk by, they kind of look in the basket, okay, I'm all right, and then they keep on walking. Or one time, you know, they'll say, Wes, you know, there's something in here that's yours. You better come and get it. Okay. Or, you
know, so they help each other.
They do, which is...
That's good. And see, that's not selfishness then, is it?
No.
Because then not only is AJ looking for his, he's also looking out for Wesley.
Yeah.
Which is good.
They do look out for each other.
Okay. I think those are the main points that he tried to make there. With this and with all the others, the less you can... use emotion, the better. In other words, do it calmly.
Yeah.
Don't do it with anger, but in just this is a matter of fact. Okay, you've got 5 minutes because if it's mm-hmm. in here after 5 minutes, mm-hmm. then I get to put it in my garage sale.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be anger or anything. You know, but the temptation is when you just get tired of doing it over and over again.
Yeah.
But the anger doesn't increase the reality. All it does is it increases your blood pressure.
Right.
So. Do it without emotion as much as possible.
I have a question.
Sure.
On page 180, the very last, in the first paragraph, very last sentence, it says he has to learn how to think of others. Can you think of any situations or things that you created for your kids to learn how to do things for others? Like, did you go around to the neighbors and maybe have them mow their lawn for free or help somebody at church? You know, is there anything that you kind of fabricated to help teach that? Do you remember?
I didn't. I didn't do anything in a fabricated way. It was... but it just having them write letters to grandma and grandpa that is something that they like to do, and that would be something that I encouraged.
Okay.
That, because... And then the way that grandma and grandpa reacted to it made them understand how meaningful it was mm-hmm. to think of other people. And as I was growing up, I started to realize pretty early what it took to make my mom happy, right? And I wanted to,
yeah.
You know, and really what I want to get back to this again. Anything that we do, we want our kids to do it for the right reason. It's mm-hmm. gospel motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really thinking a lot about it again the last couple of weeks. How do we teach children to do the right thing for the right reason? And there really isn't a way that you teach that, because it's a matter of faith, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what you do is so in order to get this, then you must teach God's word to them.
Yeah.
You must ask that the Holy Spirit would work faith in their hearts, and then mm-hmm. what they do is going to be a product of faith. But there is more that God asks us to do that He promises to bless, and that gets back to the basic two commandments: love God mm-hmm. and love your neighbor as yourself. So these are commands that are given to us as parents,
mm-hmm.
and by doing that, by loving our children, then we're modeling God's love for them. We're teaching them how God has loved us.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me is the clearest way of teaching children to love is by representing God, modeling God's unconditional love for our children. And that unconditional love is going to show itself in the way that we're going to be very concerned about everything that goes on in their life.
Yeah.
It, so as we correct them, we're going to be correcting them with love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that we're not going to correct them. That
right.
wouldn't be loving.
Right.
Yes.
And see the same thing that God would do for us. Mm-hmm. God loves us, and so he sent his son to die for us. But he doesn't just let us go then.
Mm-hmm.
He says, okay, you're on your own now for the next 80 years.
Mm-hmm.
While we're in this world, he disciplines us. He leads us by his word. He corrects us with the things in our lives to keep us close to him.
Right.
We don't know why he does the things that he does, but we know that the result of those things that are happening bring us closer to him. So we need to model that in the way that we teach our children. Whatever we do is motivated for our love for them, and we love them because God loved us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all back to this, when we're talking about selfishness,
mm-hmm.
it's a real hard one to get to.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to teach a child any fruit of the Spirit is by modeling that fruit of the Spirit. So selfishness is the opposite of one of the fruits of the Spirit. What do you think it would be? Faith, kindness, maybe, right?
Yeah.
Encouragement, I suppose. There are gifts of the Spirit.
Empathy.
If we would go through the empathy,
yeah.
right? But at any point, any rate, we know that selfishness is not a gift of the Spirit. It's a sin.
Yeah.
It's looking at our own needs.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
And one more point that 182. Gifts should not be a treat given once in a while. I mean, should be. Not every week or every month or every trip, you know.
Right.
Because then they expected it.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're right.
And this is something else that I'm not clear on yet, and so I can't give you a clear definition of it, but I believe that the gospel is the best way to motivate. I believe that there are times when you must use the law to correct, and that's going to be the negative law. But remember, we talked about there also being positive mm-hmm. reinforcement. In other words, you're saying that you would say, that was a good job.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate what you've done. And that, you know, that's positive. My point and my question that I need to talk more with pastors about is there a place for positive reinforcement, rewards mm-hmm. of any kind? Because in reality, when you work, you get a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's reality.
Yeah.
That's the way this world works.
Right.
And it's the reason that you work may have some really good purposes behind, because God tells us that we are to care for our families. If we recognize that mm-hmm. one way to care for our families is to work and to earn money, you know, then, you know, so the paycheck is going to be that reward.
Mm-hmm.
How do you use a positive reinforcement? How do you use rewards in a child's life without getting them into an attitude of self-righteousness?
Yes.
Or that the only reason they're doing it is for the reward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of what he's touching on right here.
Mm-hmm.
Gifts should not be a regular thing. They should be a special thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas giving them an allowance is different,
mm-hmm.
I think, than mm-hmm. paying them to do their jobs, right?
Right.
Right. So I would like to find some ways within our school setting of finding more ways to be positive with our students.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I don't want to go too far with it. I don't want to teach our kids
right.
self-righteousness.
Right.
I don't want to put them in a position where the only reason they're doing
right.
the right thing is so that they get the reward.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I still think that there's a way that we can be
mm-hmm.
more positive with our kids.
Mm-hmm. One of the strategies with the Growing Kids God's Way class, and I'm going to review that again, is that as children mature, they go through that line. You know, when they're toddlers, you can't sit down and explain everything to them. You a quick smack somewhere and that's it. No, or
right.
you know,
right.
but then as they mature and grow older, then there's a chance to explain more. And so then you're going from the negative to the positive, and I think, you know, again, explaining the ultimate, and I think, you know, that happens as we mature and get older.
One of the things that Pastor Waterstrat said to me, I think was really important. He said, the law is good. Just because it's painful sometimes, it doesn't mean it's bad. Mm-hmm. The law is good, mm-hmm. Because it helps us to know right and wrong. It is a guide that we can use to instruct. And if we go back to, if we study the Ten Commandments and we kind of study why there's a right and why there's a wrong, then it really, it's helpful, it's mm-hmm. instructional. Mm-hmm. We don't always understand at the time that we're obeying a command, why it was a good thing to obey that command. But we go back to, there's another section where they talk about dangers. Mm-hmm. And you think about dangers in this life. If a child is putting himself in danger by his action, you don't take the time to explain to him what that danger is. Mm-hmm. You get him out of danger, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
But at the time of danger, you don't explain, but you prepare the child for the danger to come by making them aware. The law serves that purpose. It helps us to see, this is right. You do these things, and God will keep you out of danger. Mm-hmm. If you go play Foursquare on the freeway, you know, it's a nice surface and everything, good place to do it, but it's dangerous.
Right.
It's dangerous. So, and there may be times that you could actually get away with it and not get killed. But that's the way it is with the law. You know, you may be able to break the law, and it may not damn you, but you stay in that law, the wages of sin is mm-hmm. death. Mm-hmm. So the law is good. But what we would like to emphasize is by really devoting your life to obeying God's law, we want to say that that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And we want to encourage kids. But we don't want to get them to be self-righteous to think that there's anything they can blame.
Right.
Okay, well, the next one is the sexual exploration. And that one, like they said, that's a little harder to talk about. Mm-hmm. He says a few things in here that I believe are really important. One is that all kids are going to be curious and are going to do some exploring, and it would be wrong if we would punish them for that, because then we would in some way be indicating to them that these gifts from God are bad. Mm-hmm. But the bodies that we've been given are gifts of God. But just like everything else that we've received from God, God has a purpose mm-hmm. for those things. And there are some really good books. He mentioned some. The Concordia Publishing House has a couple of really good series that are age appropriate. They have some for kindergarten age, they have some for eighth grade, and they have four in between. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a total of six different levels that you give them the information that's necessary that would be appropriate for what the kids would need to learn.
Books, do you know anything about them?
I don't know anything about these books.
Because I was thinking to look up them.
In our library, which is getting packed up to be moved, mm-hmm. there are some of those books available. On the other hand, the ones that I could recommend, we have catalogs for Concordia Publishing House. If you have access to the internet, just type in the word Concordia.
How do you spell it?
Concordia.
Ordia.
Right, Concordia. And they will give you a book. They'll give you the series that I'm talking about. And all you'd have to do is type in Concordia Publishing House. When you get there, look for information about sex education, and they have wonderful books for that. And really, I think that's all that we need to say. You can read what he has to say, and...
Oh, his example of... Oh, my gosh. That's
it's really purple! Oh. Yeah, that's...
Cute.
Yeah.
That's cute.
Yeah. Okay, how about swearing? I think he does an excellent job of that one. Because the point is... It starts off, you know, I think of the book, the movie, with Ralphie,
A Christmas Story.
Christmas Story. Mm-hmm. About three or four times in the movie, he was eating soap, right? Mm-hmm. And he was a connoisseur of the different soaps,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's not the best way to handle filthy words. It's effective, however.
Oh, that's so funny.
And it, that may be... one of the results at some point down the line, I don't think, again, no child is going to die from soap poisoning.
Right.
Or he's not going to go blind from soap poisoning.
Right.
As Ralphie did. You probably, I don't know if you've seen the movie or not, but it's funny. But when a child uses bad language, I think the important thing that he's saying is, your mom and your dad, we know these words just as well. We know all of them, mm-hmm. but we've chosen not to use them because, and then tell why. Right. Some of these words are sinful because they're using God's name in vain. Some are just inappropriate. They're not what people would use it mm-hmm. in a public setting. They're mm-hmm. offensive.
Question. Is that the four letter word the bad word? That's what he's talking about.
He says swearing on page 185.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Technically, swearing would only be just promising to tell the truth under an oath. Mm-hmm. That's what swearing is defined as. But any bad language,
I don't get it.
What's that?
Why is it used? I mean, this word is used for bad
it's
language.
That's what people refer to it as. It's a mis
in our language
misdefined.
We have a different word for that.
Oh.
Yeah.
I would say offensive language rather than swearing.
Yeah.
Because there's offensive language,
mm-hmm.
and it's offensive for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It can be offensive to God. It can be offensive to other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had an example yesterday. That I heard the boys outside playing in the backyard, and they were not saying anything horribly bad, but kind of, they were in their silly kind of mode, and when they're silly, they sort of make up silly words and silly sounds, and they were just making up kind of, I would say it was just kind of potty talk. Not even first degree, it was like half of a degree. But you know what? That's starting to go the wrong step.
Yeah.
And so I spoke out the window and I said, you know, that's not very nice talk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and Wesley just had to memorize the second commandment about misusing the Lord's name. And AJ had just had to memorize that plus its meaning. And so I said, Wesley, what is your memory for today, you know, that you had to learn today for tomorrow? And he said it. And I turned to AJ and said, AJ, what does this mean? And he rifled off the meaning.
Right.
And I said, Wesley, so when you choose to talk like this, maybe you're not saying God's name, but you're not saying nice words. And, you know, it may not be very bad, but that's going to lead you to do other words that maybe are a little bit badder.
Right.
Worse.
The gift of speech is a gift also.
Mm-hmm.
And how are we going to use that gift? We should use it to glorify God,
right.
not to offend God or other people.
There's a good verse, and you know what?
Let your conversation be,
let
it
no,
be yes, be yes, and no, be no.
There's one I have in here. Let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouth.
But only
what is
James.
Helpful. Ephesians 4. But only
okay.
what is helpful for building others up according
right.
to their needs, that
right.
it may benefit those who
use
listen.
Use your gift of speech to build other people up.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. Good passage.
Yeah. So.
What do you think about this example that he says here on page 186? where it says, Daddy and Mommy knows every filthy and dirty word, but we have the choice to use, not to use those words? What do you think? Is that okay to tell them?
I think it's important to tell them. Because they might think that you've never heard those before. And I guess I would have to say that thought crossed my mind as I was, as I started learning some of those bad words and I was in grade school. That my parents are too nice. They wouldn't have known these bad words.
Right.
And I think it's important for the child to know we do know these words, but we know that these are offensive words. Mm-hmm. It's sinful to use some of these words, and it's just offensive to people to use other of them. Mm-hmm. We remember having a discussion with 7th and 8th graders about this very thing. They said, well, why is it so wrong to use the word? And they wouldn't use it, but they would say, can I spell it, or can I tell you? So they knew it was wrong by that very fact. But they said, why is that wrong? And it's just, the basic answer I would give, it's not socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, there are socially acceptable words for some things that could be said in different words that are very offensive. Mm-hmm. Right? We just got through talking about the gift of sex. Mm-hmm. And that, the words that are used for that are very offensive. Mm-hmm. And the world even recognizes that. Mm-hmm. But why is one acceptable and why isn't? It's the connotation that goes along with those words. And we want to use our words to build each other up rather than to tear down. Mm-hmm. It's not showing respect for whatever the gift is that God has given us if we use offensive language. Mm-hmm. It's all part of worship. Worship is your whole life. Mm-hmm. Should we go on to the next one about talking back? Mm-hmm. The very last statement that he makes, the very last paragraph, is one that I said, yes. Okay. A key concept with which reality discipline agrees completely is God didn't create any of us to be walked on. Mm-hmm. Right. And so he talks a lot about relationships of father to daughter, mm-hmm. mother to sons, mm-hmm. and how they set a pattern for married life. Another relationship that I really think sets a pattern for that relationship, and that there isn't any talking back, is the way that the husband treats the wife, mm-hmm. and the wife treats the husband. Mm-hmm. Because then you model a behavior and a way that you talk to each other.
Right.
Or the way that mom and dad talk about other people.
Yes.
Right? Because mom and dad still have people that are in authority over them, mm-hmm. just like children have people that are in authority, that the parents that are in authority over them.
I think you should never talk in front of your people about
I agree.
Anybody else.
Never. Never. That's what leads up to sins against the eighth commandment, bearing false witness against your neighbor.
They're not,
they're not mature enough.
Exactly.
But you know what? What I believe, I believe that Scripture teaches us that really there are very, very few times when you ever should talk about other people's behavior.
Yes, it's true.
The people that you need to talk to about their behavior is them, right? If my brother sins against me, I should take that sin to him, mm-hmm. and talk to him about it, and that the two of us would talk about it.
There might be some cases when husband and wife might
need to talk about it, and what are we going to do about this? Mm-hmm. But if a single person, that might be a little harder for them, because who do they talk about? But you need to be very careful whenever you're talking about other people, because that sets an example for the children. Later he's going to talk about tattling, but I think talking back and tattling follow the same principle that he's bringing up here, that God didn't create any of us to be walked on. We must show a mutual respect. Adults will get more respect from children that they show respect to, but they can't tolerate it if a child is ever disrespectful. That needs to be met head on. He talks about a variety of ways for confronting a child who's talking back. And there may be some better ways than others, but the worst thing to do is to ignore a child that talks back. Mm-hmm. Because then they're thinking that it's okay. They can do it again. They may have learned that kind of talk from hearing other children talk to their parents. They may have seen it on television, but the message needs to come through loud and clear that it's a sin to be disrespectful to anyone by talking, using what you say to be hurtful to them. Mm-hmm. That there is an order of authority. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when he uses that example about pulling the rug on the bottom of 187, sometimes you don't have something you can pull the rug out from under them.
And,
it's challenging when you don't have
something. Well, you know, the most I know that we want to use reality as much as possible to discipline the kids, but sometimes you don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. But you must do something when it's sinful. Then you need to confront them and talk about it. I'm going to refer back to discussions that I've had with our pastors about this. And bottom line that we keep coming back to is it's really important that when a child has sinned, that you talk through the situation with them. And I can't go into any more detail than that. I gave you a technique to talk through it with them. Mm-hmm. But that the bottom line is they need to understand clearly why what they did was wrong. And it's going to be more difficult the younger the child is. But just to punish without instruction isn't discipline.
Mm-hmm. It's not teaching them anything.
No. Discipline is trying to teach them to follow. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, when we talk about pastor, the name of pastor's class keeps coming back to me, raising children who love their Savior. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we want our children to do. We want them to grow and learn to love their Savior. Mm-hmm. And as he loves them and they love him, they'll learn to follow him. That's what discipline is, following their Savior. So. Okay, how about tattling?
We did talk a little bit about
that.
I don't know how we got out of order.
I don't know. Yeah, that's what I think.
Maybe we got going on talking back or I don't know.
Yeah. Somehow it tattling.
Yeah, I think Jim did not like that. Oh, because we started talking about how his mom would let the brothers go at it and you know, how he didn't like that.
Yeah, I disagreed with that one too. I'm glad that he disagreed because I didn't always put yeses down. I put noes down, and that was one that I don't agree with. That here we go. It's back on page 174. He said, "There are, of course, exceptions to every rule of general principle. There are times when one child may pick a fight with another who is totally outmatched in size and strength. I know of one mother who found her 12-year-old choking his 9-year-old brother." You know, to me, it should never get to that point. And it may get to that point if you just let them fight it out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What, you're not teaching them anything by letting them fight, because it's sin to hurt your brother.
Right. In our anger, do not sin.
That's right.
And I can't do that.
They're not allowed to fight it out. Mm-hmm. They're allowed to, but I would say it would be a good thing to put them at one chair here, one chair here. You're going to sit facing each other, and you discuss it. You work this out, but you keep your hands off each other. Mm-hmm. And you need to be kind in the things that you say to each other.
Right.
That's instruction. Right. But just letting them battle it out, I don't agree with that one. Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Mark was very resentful of his oldest brother. Mark is right in
your
the
middle.
Yeah. He was right in the middle of 9 children, five boys, 4 girls, and his oldest brother, which was roughly 5 or 6 years, maybe, or 6 or 7, older than him. And he would just pick on Mark.
Yeah. Mark. Well, I was the oldest, so I know what I did. I picked on my sisters. Mm-hmm. But my dad would not have it.
Well, his parents didn't always see it.
Well, I got away with it a lot too, but I'm telling you, I made a big mistake one time. Mm-hmm. And I did it right in front of my dad.
Oh.
And
how old were you?
It took about 2 seconds, and I was wondering, what happened to me? Why does my head hurt so bad? You know, and I was like, oh, well, I didn't know what hit me. My dad didn't waste any time taking care of it.
Wow. How old were you?
I was probably 11.
You remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
I was so upset. It was on the way to church.
Oh.
And I was so upset. I couldn't worship. Right. So Dad made me sit in the car the whole church service.
So you had just sisters?
I had 3 sisters and a brother. But my brother was my favorite because he was 11 years younger than me. So, and I would always protect him from the sisters who were always trying to mother him, you know? So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that you need to hit your kids to do this.
Right.
But they need to know in no uncertain terms that disrespect is not to be tolerated, that you aren't to pick on the others in the family. Mm-hmm. And so I don't agree with that either, that you can just let the kids fight it out, because the pecking order doesn't allow it for a level playing field. Because AJ and Wesley wouldn't work to have them fight it out.
Right. So. Yeah, Pam and I were even saying last week, you know, she told Johnny, you know, you better watch out because someday Michael's going to be bigger than you. You know, and I would tell AJ, I said, AJ, you better watch out because Wesley may be bigger than you someday. So you need to learn how to settle this.
Well, yeah, that my brother, he's my little brother, is about 6'3 and 240 pounds. I mean, he is a big guy.
How funny.
And I always call him my little brother, just you know, my little sisters got so mad at me one time. She says, when I grow up and you grow down, I'm going to kick you with my big black shoes. So the same, you know, so it was a problem for me as the oldest. I tried to take care of them, but I went too far with it. So.
Yep.
Okay.
That's the end of 10.
I think with tattling, he concludes with a pretty good point. And I'll give you my method of dealing with tattling. This mother would listen to a child when they tattle. And if it was tattling, she would say thank you. And do nothing about it. If there was really a serious problem, then she might get involved.
Well, but then the question comes up in my mind. It's like, okay, one tattles to the other and reports, well, one tattles to me reporting on the other, and then nothing gets done. Then the person who did the naughty thing goes, cha-ching.
Yeah, so see, and so mine is, if somebody's going to take the time to come and tattle to me, I'm going to make them take more time.
Right.
So I'm not going to let Okay, Sally comes up. Johnny's throwing rocks on the playground. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So then I'm gonna. What I would say in that case is, if she's gonna come to me with it, then I'm going to make her take care of it. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna say, okay, go get Johnny, and you have to come back and talk to me together. And then I won't let Sally tell anything about what Johnny's doing. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna make Johnny tell what he's doing, mm-hmm. and make Sally stand right there. So she's giving up her time, mm-hmm. as this is going on. Mm-hmm. And then after it's all over, then maybe we're going to find out that Sally was involved in this a little bit too.
Right.
That there was some reason. And that, or I'll even ask her, so what were you trying to do? Were you trying to help him, or were you trying to hurt him by telling me? So that they understand what the difference between tattling and helping is.
Right.
Because this way she has to give up her time. Mm-hmm. She might take a little pleasure in seeing him have to fess up to what he's doing wrong, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't want to discipline him while she's present. Mm-hmm. But I would want her to understand that, you know, if she's going to get involved, it's going to take her time.
Right.
And that she needs to understand that, really, why did you do this? Did you do this to help him, or did you do this to get him in trouble? Mm-hmm. Tattling is when you're telling on a bad behavior about somebody else with the intent of getting them in trouble. Mm-hmm. And if you tell the teacher about something that's being done wrong with the intention of helping that person who's doing the wrong, then it's okay. Mm-hmm. Because there could be some really serious things going on.
Right.
Like if there's two kids fighting and one is obviously bigger than the other, she comes up and says, they're fighting and he's getting hurt, you mm-hmm. know? We wouldn't want a child not to talk right. about that.
Right.
Or so-and-so took my lunch money, you know?
Right.
Okay, yeah. there are cases where, you know, you've got to be able to yeah. tell a teacher. And that's why authority figures are there. We look in scripture. The sword doesn't hold any fear for those who do what's right. It's for those that do what's wrong. Mm-hmm. The sword, justice, mm-hmm. government, authority, the school, whatever we're talking about, mm-hmm. is for those that are doing what's wrong. So that's my technique mm-hmm. in it. And
I like that.
In it, whenever I'm counseling kids, the basic principle that I want to follow is, you tell me what you did. Don't tell me what he did or she did. You tell me what you did. And eventually I might get to a point to double check to make sure that they're being completely honest. After they've told me all their part in it, then I might let them speak a little bit more about what the other person did. But they tend not to tattle if you make them give up too much of their own time to get the other kid in trouble, right? But if it's a serious problem, then they're willing to help the other person involved and give up their time. So it becomes more of a problem as we started the class kind of by saying that kids become more and more aware of others around them, very selfish, and first grade is when the selfishness starts to really exhibit itself more so than kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And then second grade, it can continue to get even worse, or it can start to get better because they're starting to learn how to deal with some of these things. But tattling is a big problem when you get to about 6 years old, and it continue up to 7 years old if people don't really understand a proper way to handle it.
I don't have a problem with Luciano. He never tells me anything. Seriously.
What I find a problem with parents.
He doesn't have anybody to tell on.
Here's the
yeah,
parent.
I mean, even
the parents said I would say
happens,
no. He doesn't. He doesn't have a problem with tattling.
Yeah.
I think he might have the other problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
it's true.
you know what I think? I think moms need to work on. I'm saying this because Larita, she's famous for it. Is pumping people with questions, you know? She does it mercilessly to our boys, you know?
Why?
And you know what I mean? By just question after question after uh-huh. question, you know? And it's like, she'll do it to me. I talk to the boys on the phone, and then she'll say, well, okay, what about this? What about that? What about... Uh-huh. I say, you should have talked to me yourself. I don't remember to ask all these questions. You know,
it's a mom question.
That's what moms do.
I know.
And so, well, I guess I'm trying to wonder if it might happen with you too. You might do that too much with your kids, where you pump them with questions.
I do.
And so, a better way to do it would be to talk with him rather than. Pumping with questions.
Mm-hmm. Is to, I try that too.
Right. It's hard to have a conversation without asking questions.
Yeah, it does. Okay, don't ask me anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. But somehow figure out a way that you can talk with him without asking him questions. In other words, if he brings something home, just say, "Whoa, I really like this. I just might ask a question.
Yeah. Tell me about this.
Right. Tell me about it. Tell me how you did that. It's hard not to ask the question again, I see that you wrote about your dog, or you wrote about your cat, you know, or I see you got every single one of these right, or, you know, and make them statements rather than questions, and they'll be more willing to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And give them time to talk, because I'm slow at getting my thoughts out, and I don't like to be interrupted, you know, personal thing. And when people keep asking me questions and I'm not really finishing answering the first question, I don't like that. But as a teacher, I do the very same thing. You know, I won't let the kid answer the question because I think I know what they're going to say, and I'll start calling on somebody else, or I'll make a comment.
I do it.
I know how hard it is. Just by my trying to give you examples, I almost did it about 3 or 4 times. So, well, it's time to go. We will wrap things up next week. We're going to do the rest of the book, so it's all fair game for 11 or 12. Whether we finish or not, Mr. Holman and I will, and the final word, I guess, they don't give it a chapter, but anything else in the book that you would like to talk about, we'll take time to talk about next week then.
Okay.
All right?
Good.
So we had 51 minutes here. We'll see if Pam can get this. So I hope you enjoy it, Pam.
Everybody should bring a